Up first, as always, on Tuesday afternoons, our chance to visit with our friend, writer extraordinaire Colin Fleming. His latest book is If You Brackets, Fabula, Fantasy, Effery, Hope. And he's got about 19 more in the queue, just waiting for somebody to get their head out of their butt in the publishing industry and get them out there to us. Hello, Colin.
Hey, how's it going, Kimball?
Well, thank you. Good. Good to be back. We missed you last week, but the team is reunited. Carrie's back from New Orleans, and I'm back from my back porch.
I'm a constant. I never go anywhere. Always here for you, buddy.
We appreciate that. We need that in these troubled times that we're in. And maybe we need to dip back into the archives and listen to some great radio. And you know, we've talked about this before with the Johnny Dollar shows, but yeah, these shows are 60-ish years old, but they're as well-written and as well-acted as just about anything you'd find out there in the marketplace today.
Yeah, people, they tend to think that if something is of a certain vintage, it's necessarily going to be these negative things. And we see that, like, some people won't even watch a black-and-white film. And obviously, color black and white isn't an issue with something from the radio then or now. But they're so well put together, the best of these. Now, there can be a lot of variability in some of the shows from the time that were, like, so popular at the time. They're quite broad and, like, The Great Gildersleeve. Like, it's a tough listen right now in this age. But Gunsmoke is one of the, I don't know, five or six best of the radio shows that we have. And it's also one of the better television shows we've ever had, though they're quite a bit different. And Gunsmoke radio people can be like, I don't like you, Gunsmoke TV people, and vice versa. So if you are someone, though, who can compartmentalize, you have two great things to enjoy and a lot, certainly a lot of episodes of each of them to partake of as well.
Yeah, Gunsmoke, as you mentioned, aired from 1952 to 1961. And we'll talk about some specific episodes. But first of all, James Arness was not Marshall Matt Dillon in the radio series. It was William Conrad, best known to TV viewers as either Cannon or the titular Fat Man in Jake and the Fat Man.
Yeah, well, sometimes the fat provides and sometimes the fat takes away, Kimball. You know how it can be.
Yes.
And so for William Conrad, fat was lucrative at certain points. But at other points, like, which we'll come to with certain aspirations they had, the obesity wasn't so useful for him. So he was one of those people. There are just so many from, like, great actors from that time, radio actors. You need to have the voice, you need to have the range. It wasn't just having the voice. It's like your standard, like, Casey Kasem voice every time. You had to be able to doctor that voice up while still always having a voice for the radio medium. And so that was William Conrad, and he was ubiquitous when he was cast in this role. He was not the first choice because he was someone that you would have heard a lot of. And so it was like one of those deals where the people behind the program wanted relative unknowns. But he was so suited for the role, and he became a different Matt Dillon than we're going to get later on TV with James Arness, because it's a different show. Now, Gunsmoke, the TV show, could just knock you over with how emotionally raw it could be. But I would say that the radio program is more raw, and part of that rawness has to do with an open-endedness to many of the episodes. And also that the bad guy wins quite often. So that's just the way how life is going to go sometimes. But yeah, so William Conrad gets that gig. And people had in their mind's eye this, because you read a book, you listen to the radio, and I think there's like a great relationship between literature and radio, because you're seeing a scene, if the person's any good, who's creating it, in your mind. And so people had this idea of William Conrad that didn't really jibe with how he physically appeared.
I was surprised at how much James Arness sounds like William Conrad did in the radio show.
And this was a great voice. And the way I think this went in the mid-1950s was, it was a sellout, the TV show. And the radio show was the real deal. And maybe it didn't help the TV show at first that they were reliant on, they weren't reliant, they were using a lot of the same scripts. Now you have the same quartet, the core quartet that's going to be at the centerpiece of each of the shows. But again, those characters are quite a bit different too. Now, one thing that's always strange to me is whenever I see like a description of Chester from the radio show, who is played by Parley Bear, who was a staple, of course, of the Johnny Dollar, the five-parter, and others too, but like that's where you're really shown, that he's described as dim. And I find that strange. It's like when people talk about Watson in the Sherlock Holmes stories, they always talk about him as being dim. And he's nothing of the kind. He's a doctor. He's a medical man. And I know that doesn't like confer intelligence upon you, but he's highly intelligent. And Chester is that. Well, he's a tad too loquacious at times, and Matt Dillon tells him to shut up in a nice way. But he's counted on, and he's not chronicling like Watson is. But these are four pretty sharp people at the center of the radio show.
And a familiar voice playing Doc in the radio series.
Yes, people will know this would be Floyd the Barber, if he's known to most people, from Howard McNear from the Andy Griffith Show. And he is, in the radio show of Gunsmoke, he's actually committed a murder, and he's come west. And like, so he's ducking the law. Now, the murder wasn't like entirely his fault, but he's going to potentially go away or like be hung. It's just not going to go well for him. So he's like has this other identity. And especially early on in the series, he's a doctor after the heart, I'd say, of Ambrose Bierce. He's like really into autopsies. Like, it's fun. It's a good time. It's like, get a bottle, get the body open, see what's going on in there. And he has a most mordant wit. And they soften him a little bit as it goes along. But yeah, he's there, and he's another one too. It's like they found the talent, a lot of these radio shows, and they just kept riding the talent because he comes up all the time. You might not even recognize his voice because he's changing it quite a bit in Johnny Dollar. So it's like the best shows. It was like going, I don't know, moving between the Red Sox and the Yankees back, like, I don't know, at the beginning of the century. The best players were kind of like going back and forth a little bit.
And they cleaned up a little bit of the backstory for Miss Kitty for TV, where she ran, the Long Branch Saloon, but she's got a slightly different occupation in the radio serial.
She does. She definitely does. In the TV show, she's an entrepreneur. She's a businesswoman. She is highly successful. And I'm not going to say that she's not highly successful in the radio show as a person, and she acts as a moral compass and that sort of one person Greek chorus. She's, as we'll see in one of the episodes in particular, in which is oriented around her infamy, I guess, if you will, that she is sometimes more astute in given social situations than Matt Dillon is. But now she's a straight up prostitute. there's no way around it. When she's talking to Matt, she has she's emerged from a back room and toweled down and done what she had to do, and they get a drink together or hash over the events of the day. But that's I think there was like an interview from the time, like a contemporary interview. One of the people behind the show said something like glib, but it was like she wasn't selling like chocolate Easter bunnies or something like that. It's like no, she. That would be special. That would be off the official menu.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Well, that occupation plays into one of the episodes we want to talk about, and it's an episode entitled Kitty, which is largely about Matt Dillon wanting to take her to a party and wondering how that will play with the marshal and the prostitute.
Well, it's like you enjoy staging at your home. It's a big chivalry. And I would advise people Well, anyone who's a fan of a Western, of the Western genre in any medium, knows chivalry. But it's a big to-do, Kimball, isn't it? When the whole town, like, you can't get much bigger than a chivalry. It's just what you want to be going to. It's, you know, it's the social event of the season. And it's in a hall, and it's a dance, and it doesn't have to be indoors, but this one is. And I would say that Matt Dillon is, he's love struck in this episode, and you don't, like, you hear him singing to himself, which you're just not going to find very often in the other almost 500. I mean, that's how many episodes we're talking, almost 500 other episodes. And the TV show ran for like 20 plus years until, like, had the record until The Simpsons passed it. But he is bullheaded about this. And he is just not picking up on maybe how this will go down in the town. And that's one thing for him not to be bothered by that. He's certainly not ashamed of Kitty. He's proud of her. But he's so wrapped up in his sort of rapture for her that he's not considerate of her feelings. And it becomes this embarrassing night out for her, where she wants to leave multiple times, and he becomes more and more bullheaded, and he embarrasses her. And they patch it up at the end, but I like that idea, though, that one's ardor can be so consuming that it makes you act in moral ways that aren't consistent with your own usual moral character.
And the characters, too, in many of these episodes, much more willing to get into arguments and call each other on their behaviors than what I remember from the television series. And one of the episodes that never pestered Chester, I think it's the Shiloh character, after Chester gets dragged behind a horse by some bad guys, some Texans in town, it's Shiloh who says to Matt Dillon, "I'm not the one who sent Chester to do my job."
Yeah, that's really surprising, because that's like this lesser character. It's just like a townsfolk and someone who occasionally pitches in. And not only does he freely voice his criticism, he dresses the guy down. And like Matt Dillon in the radio version, he is he's like this deity type figure almost. Not in some like heroic, high noon kind of way, but there's something like they just expect more out of him, that he's not even so much someone who enforces the law. He's enforcing a code of a way of life that you ostensibly want to have. This is a growth series. It's about the country extending itself westward. And so that's when we have the famous fanfare in the intro, and there's only one way to handle the killers and all of that, like that famous line from the beginning. The killers and the spoilers, like the people who are wrecking it for the rest of us, and that's with the smell of gun smoke, meaning no quarter. We're doing what we have to do here. And what's interesting about when the guy criticizes Dillon in this, he takes the criticism. He doesn't, like, double down.
Right.
Thinking, like, there's no one today. They'd be like, "I'm going to show you." And he, and it's not even that he's criticized once. It's like a second instance in the episode where the guy sort of, I guess, gives him what you'd call lip. And so Dillon goes out. They were messing around with Chester. When you messed around with people back then, you could kill them. It's like you said, you tie someone to like their horse and slap the horse on the rump. Ha 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 ha, he's being dragged. And you might live and you might not. So when Dillon goes out to get these guys, and when he gets the second guy, he's not even like armed, like he's risking his life.
Right.
Just like that, sort of teed off. But when he gets like the first guy, he straps the guy to his horse. And this actually does happen in a completely different episode of the TV series, where that's sort of how, when Dillon catches up with someone, that's how he punches someone. He ties them to the horse, sends the horse away. And you're lucky with the jostling of you're going to survive the whatever it is, 10-mile ride. I mean, think of that, back into town.
Mm-hmm.
You don't go flying off. So it's kind of torturing the guy to make this right by his friend. And he didn't even really do something like dastardly to his friend. There were just some guys being like lewd and loud. And he sent Chester to go tell them to sort of pipe down. rather than going himself. And even still, the guy who gives him lip, he's like, well, I didn't send him. You sent him. You were the one who put this ball in motion.
And this happens in a couple of the episodes. Again, it's all about proving your manhood back in the day. But he lets the other guy out of jail and basically challenges him to a fight. You know, no guns. Let's go. Let's see who's tougher.
Hey, I like stuff like that. I mean, I feel like when I'm running the stairs and I see someone like it's a wide stair and someone's cutting across them diagonally, yeah, and I'm thinking like you go up and you go down. You're respectful of other people's spaces. Kimball, I'm not going to lie. I wish I lived in a society where I could just, like, not from behind, come from the front, just start attacking. I'd love that. That would be good. That would just be good for me. Let the best person win. I mean, I have, like, an age range. Like, you have to be under a certain age. But I feel like Marshall Matt Dillon would have felt the same way. And you know what? I have a tidbit for you, Kimball. When I was on Mother Number Two, my foster mother, she'd give me like a name. And what she gave me was Marshall. I think she was a big gunsmoke.
Whoa.
Man. So she knew I was ready to throw a hand the first chance I would get. But yeah, it's just like bare knuckles in the streets. And you can think about like what a lawless time this was. It's like we're such a young republic in so many ways. I think people like who go and have a holiday in Europe get a real sense of that if they don't have a sense of it here. But even like when I lived in Chicago, I just remember thinking how kind of recent everything was. And like the historic homes, a lot of them were like ranch homes, and they weren't as quote unquote ancient as what we have here in New England. But this is Kansas. And so it was like brand spanking new. It was a free for all.
Now, you could do the stair. You could take a guy down. I have no question about that. But could you, Colin, amputate a man's leg like Marshall Dillon did in the episode entitled Home Surgery?
Now, this episode is actually preserved by the Library of Congress, or it's on their historical registry. And I know this because they recently asked me to write something about another sound piece that's on that registry. We can talk about that some other time on Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrers, Jesus Give Me Water. And I was looking through their list, and this is the episode from Gunsmoke.
Wow.
that made it. And it's called Home Surgery, so you're actually going to get, like, this isn't me in the bathroom with the safety pin in a match and heating that up to lance a blister. this is going to be, like, pretty hairy. And there are a number of interesting components of this episode where Dillon he's interceding. And they've kind of just come upon this place. There's not oftentimes a dramatic setup. It's like they just sort of happen into something, or Dillon's out to hunt somebody down, but it turns out someone already found him and he's like on his way back. I like that in medias res aspect of the show. So there's this guy, and he's like a war veteran, so he kind of knows the deal with the gangrene in his leg, and he has this kid, and she's going to like be orphaned, for lack of a better term. So he's just going to die. Or they could try something, like a Hail Mary. And Chester's the one who puts him up to it, because he's not like going to do it, really. It's not even entering his mind. It's this feasible outcome. But he amputates the guy's leg. Do you notice when he comes out afterwards, and he's the only one in the room, he comes out afterwards, you can hear, it's a great job by William Conrad, you can hear how shaken he is.
Oh, yeah, and he says, I need some air.
Yeah, no, he's not even like, where's the bucket? It's vomit time.
Yeah.
He maintains this kind of, this code, and it's like the kind of code that you'd have at sea. And I remember like reading this account of what inspired Melville with Moby Dick, and actually Foster Home was in New Bedford, and the true life story of a ship that was hove to by a whale. And they come back, and they've been the captain. They'd been out on like an Nantucket sleigh ride. They get back to where the ship should be, and the captain turns to like the first mate, and he says, "What ails the ship?" And it's like, "It's gone, dude. It's not here. It's all over. We're screwed. This is going to suck. We're going to draw lots, shoot each other, and eat whoever loses." So I like that he maintains it. But then this is what makes the show so good. This is one of the things. There are technical things that make it good. This is a narrative thing that makes it so great. The guy dies after anyway.
Mm.
Like, that's just real. And what I mean by that is, okay, we're not all doing home surgeries and amputating limbs and sort of that type of deal. But you do something, you do the right thing, and you've even been heroic. It doesn't work out when maybe it looked like it was going to work out. So you put your resources, yourself, your faith, into whatever is next. And that for Chester and Dylan in the show is doing right by this this young woman that the guy has left behind. But it is it's intense.
I love the episode Christmas Story that begins with Matt Dillon explaining that his horse had been injured, and so I had to shoot him. And he's sad, but he's pretty matter of fact about it. Well, it's what I had to do.
Yeah, you know how it is. Your ride goes down, and you have to be merciful to the beast once that horse breaks the leg. And usually they use the verb destroy. You hear that a lot. So he's out there. I mean, he's ways away. It's like 40 miles away from Dodge. And along comes this guy on what sounds like a pretty beat down mare. Like this horse has seen better days. And it's someone who speaks well, like they used to be in society, but they no longer are. It's like your classic, in a way, drifter, but it's really not your classic drifter, because it's someone from, as we'll see, that has this nautical background. And so it's like two like manly guys. They share a smoke. Dylan gives him some of his tobacco. Then they share the mare, which is, I like that. Think of how intimate that is. You're up there with a guy on a horse in the night, just yourself. I mean, we're like moving into Christopher Cross sailing territory, Old West style, without like water. You don't even need it. So they're going to form this relationship, and this guy is going to have this story about how he has come to wander, as it were. And it's also this like he really wants intel on what Christmas is like in Dodge. And like he's pressing Matt Dillon for this, and we see that Dillon, he's just such a normally, he's not effusive like Chester is. He's taciturn. And he wants to supply these details for this guy, but it's hard for him to do that. And so he's really working to bring forth these anecdotes and incidents and in the color of the season. And I love that, because that's where like this, you get this infusion of this Christmas spirit, these things that he's talking about that are small scale, but they're not small scale. They're the root of his seasonal memories. And so it's kind of dawning on him too, how much that means to him, how much he wants to get back, and this guy's going to go along too.
And finally, a wonderful episode called The Cabin, where Marshall Dillon is coming back from, I think, delivering a prisoner. He gets caught in a blizzard and stumbles almost out of sorts, and not really sure where he is, into this cabin where he is in a room full of murderers, and he uses a trick. This might be number one trick in the bag for Matt Dillon when they're ready to kill him. He had done this in the episode Never Pester Chester. He says, well, you couldn't kill a man without giving him a chance to get something to eat.
Oh, and my bad. This is the one on the Library of Congress registry, not
okay.
Surgery.
Okay.
Although they sort of like compete for like the top spot among like the OTR, the old time radio fans. Like people throw down over which of these they prefer. And these are all, we should say, these are all like fairly early episodes. They're like within the first like 40 or so. So yeah, he does use that. And you know what? It seems like a flimsy argument, doesn't it? Like, you owe me like a steak. Yeah. Before you kill me. It's like, do I? I mean, it seems like I don't.
Right. You want people to know that you killed a man without feeding him first? Oh, was that the code of the West? I have to give you a meal?
Right. Would that cause that much shame? It's like later you go through the town and like you've executed, you've done like some great murders. They're like, yeah, but he didn't give that last guy a T-bone.
I killed a marshal, but I fed him, so it's okay.
Yeah, he excels at trying to buy time before, in this case, he pitchforks you.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is how the dispatching occurs in this episode. And this is that sort of just raw brutalism, though, of this show. And it works because you also have these bonds between people. You have connection. You have permanent bonds, and then you have these temporary bonds. And we've spoken about that in different contexts. But I think that's what a lot of life is, and how you're going to manage those temporary relationships, which can have depth. So here we have this woman who herself has been brutalized, being kept by these men at this titular cabin, and she's obviously been raped a lot. Like, it's not like they've just tied her hands and, like, not fed her enough.
Right.
Things have been bad here. And she is trying to find, once she's, like, quote-unquote rescued, she's trying to find a life for herself. Like, what do I do now? She doesn't have anywhere to go. She doesn't really have people. And so she's trying to cozy up to her rescuer, in a way, and Marshall Dillon. And he even, like with Miss Kitty, it's the same on the TV show, of course. That was a relationship that he wouldn't, there was no marriage, because any day that this guy got up here in the land of Gunsmoke could very well be his last day. And so he had this code of his own that he wasn't going to put a prospective mate through something like that. Now, I don't know why, because you just, like, people die. Everyone seemed to be dying left and right in these shows, and you're just going to, like, remarry pretty quickly. But he's not able to do that with her. So what she's pretty clearly going into, I mean, who ends a show like this, is her own life, or at least time period, of prostitution, because she has no other means. So you've been rescued from this and the rapes of Surcease, and now you're moving on to that. So it's just unflinching that way.
Well, they're terrific episodes. And it's interesting to me that we said it started in 1952, but the radio show continued for, what, 5 or 6 years after the TV show began its run.
Now, I think that would have been strange to... in some ways, I feel like I'm at an advantage because I could go to them after the fact in whatever order I wanted, and I was able to have separate experiences. Do you know what I mean? So like the TV show was something I've been into for more amount of years than the radio show. And it was just like one of the first Westerns that, Bonanza was kind of like the gateway Western, but then I moved on to Gunsmoke. And something that I think that makes almost any radio program that's going to qualify as art, at least at sometimes as art, so effective, and that's certainly the case with Gunsmoke, is the technical side of it. Now, if people don't listen to a lot of radio or old-time radio and you listen to these episodes that we've been talking about, you will hear a symphony of found sounds. You'll hear there is the sound of the boots in the stirrup, and there's the dog, but it's not the dog on that street. It's a dog several streets away in Dodge City, and chatter coming out of, like, one bar. And then a more proximate conversation from people, like, at the hitching post to the right of the horse that's going by. There is a lot of spatial sonic depth in the design of the sound. Mm. And Johnny Dollard, the five-parters, they have that going for them, too. But I think Gunsmoke was the first radio show that turned that into an art form. Like, you are sucked back to 19th century Kansas through that sound design. So it's a crucial part of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well done. Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke, with the emphasis on the second half of the phrase there. And it wasn't Gunsmoke like on television, but Gunsmoke.
Yeah, and then that, stick around, too, for I love the coda, the song.
Yeah, that's great. What's that called? The Old Trail or something like that?
Yeah, The Old Trail. And that's, I was thinking about that title because this is a new place. It's like a new land. But think of how quickly something like familiar to us or this part of our daily lives, think of how quickly it acquires that label of old, like the old country store. The old country store is probably called that after it had been there for 3 years, because it was this emporium that was at the center of your life. And this trail that everyone goes down that, oh, it's the old trail. It's just something that people would know by that shorthand. And depending upon the episode, it plays for longer at the end. There's some fantastic country and Western guitar on that. Mm. Like in some ways, it's like a Hank Williams type of thing or a Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. It's just like a quintessential C&W sound. There's just, it's, these episodes are just replete with interesting and sometimes artful aspects.
Check them out. Gunsmoke, you can hear them all online and a lot of them out there. Colin Fleming, thank you as always for visiting with us this afternoon. We'll do it again next week.
Okay, sounds good.